Jason Romano joins me from Lake Ann Brew House to discuss founding and running a nano brewery. This is Beersmith Podcast number 158.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 158, and it's late October 2017. This week, Jason Romano joins me from Lake Ann Brew House to discuss planning and operating a nano brewery. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They're running an amazing deal right now. Get 20% off your subscription when you use the offer code BEERSMITH2017 with your order. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for home brewers and beer lovers. And you can read my new column called Ask the Experts there. Take advantage of their special deal when you use the offer code BEERSMITH2017 at beerandbrewing.com. Again, that's beerandbrewing.com. And also the new BrewVision thermometer from Blickman Engineering. This interactive wireless digital thermometer connects right to your iPhone or iPad and lets you remotely monitor and record temperatures. You can download your recipes right from the Beersmith Cloud and set updates and alerts as you brew. Get the BrewVision Bluetooth thermometer today. Another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, Beersmith Software, the industry standard for home and professional brewers, lets you design great beer recipes and brew with confidence. Download your free 21-day trial today from Beersmith.com. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Jason Romano. Jason and his wife, Melissa, founded Lake Ann Brew House in Reston, Virginia. Jason is an award-winning brewer, including 2016 and 2017 Virginia Brewers Guild Cup Awards. He joins us to discuss founding and operating a nano brewery. Jason, it's great to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks so much, Brad. This is a wonderful opportunity. I've been a fan of yours for a long time.
I see the fermenters in the back there. Hopefully, you got some good beer going on.
Yeah, we try to keep them full. Running a nano brewery, we're constantly turning beers over a lot, so we do have a few good ones in the back there working away.
Awesome. Well, let's start at the beginning. How did you and your wife finally decide that owning a small brewery was right for you?
Well, honestly, I never thought I would go pro, but the opportunity just kind of presented itself to us. We live in this great neighborhood in a historic district of Reston, Virginia, and we've lived here for over 10 years, and it's around a lake, and the lake has this village center where there's restaurants and shops and merchants, and also a lot of people living right around here. And for the longest time, we just felt like this place needed a like an English pub kind of place where you could just come in, meet with your neighbors and friends, and have a beer. But over the years, no one else thought that was an idea and wanted to do it. So we just decided to give it a try ourselves.
And that area is kind of exploding now, isn't it? Because they extended the D.C. Metro, the Washington, D.C. Metro out there, right?
Yeah, that's right. We're just a mile away from the Metro and also another mile away from another big town center. We're kind of tucked in this little nook right around this lake, but it was the original part of Reston that was founded over 50 years ago, back when nobody considered commuting into DC. We're about 20 minutes away from DC without traffic, but now there's, of course, everyone commutes into DC or downtown to get to work, but this is a bit of an oasis, we feel.
So you said you never intended to go pro. Were you a home brewer for a while?
Yeah, I've been home brewing ever since college. That's been over 20 years. Just started off in my fraternity house, and and kind of just been doing that ever since. When this opportunity kind of presented itself, we were actually looking for a way to invest in our community or somehow be like, kind of bring something to the community. And we didn't exactly know what it was going to be. And we found this space that, really looked, I mean, it used to be a small restaurant and they had recently vacated. So we started thinking, would this space actually work to be a nano brewery, small scale brewery with a tap room? And as we just were exploring it, we were getting deeper and deeper. And the next thing I know, we had the keys to the place and I ordered equipment and we kind of realized that we were actually doing it. So
you just woke up one morning, you owned a brewery, huh?
Yeah, there was a moment of panic there, I think. Like, what are we actually doing? But it's definitely been a fun road.
And I think you told me you got roughly a 2-barrel brewery. Is that right?
Yeah, we have a 2-barrel brew house. And it's the perfect size for our community right here. We're definitely profitable at that size, serving just out of our tap room. There's no way we could make any money if we were to actually try to distribute, like make bottles or cans or try to sell kegs to restaurants or things. But for a nano brewery this size, tap room only sales, it works out really well.
Well, let's go back to the beginning. What were some of the challenges you ran into trying to plan out the brewery? I assume you had to put some planning into it before you actually took the keys, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the planning was kind of in flight. We were working through all the permitting processes and licensing and things like that. Planning in the biggest part about planning for this was space considerations, because we are in this mixed use residential area. We're actually inside a condo, where the ground floor is for like merchants and commercial. And then, the two floors above us are residents. So we actually have people living above us. And we're in this like tight little space. So trying to fit in all the equipment was our first challenge. I was always wondering if it was going to be kind of challenging being so close to residents, but they have actually been like our biggest supporters and just really excited when we were moving in. In fact, a guy right above us wanted me to try to install a tap line directly through the ceiling into his place. He wanted a line there.
Who wouldn't want that, right?
I know. the alcohol board would probably frown upon that, but
yeah. Did you have a challenge? Did you run into challenges with permitting and all that? I know a lot of friends of mine started businesses had, you know, I think aren't you in Fairfax County? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah. We're in Fairfax County. We have, of course, there's, you know, the licensing, you need a TTB license from the federal government. And also we're in Virginia, so we have the Virginia Alcohol Board, the ABC here, we need the license from. But there was also the county permitting. We're small enough where the Virginia Department of Agriculture, which typically certifies breweries, they kind of deferred us to our local health department. So we had Fairfax County Health to go through, as well as Reston, the town that we're living in, is a planned community. And it has other, you know, regulations and guidelines to go through. And then I also mentioned we're actually inside a condo association. So we had lots of levels of bureaucracy to work through.
How long did it take to go through all that process? Because I know some people have said it can take, you know, many, many months to get all that done, right?
It did. It was about maybe about 6 months basically worth of time going through all of that. We had a delay opening up, though, because as I mentioned, this handoff between the Virginia Department of Agriculture and our county health department, that wasn't actually a law yet or in the regulations. So they were kind of making this up as they went along. And we were helping them. We had to help them in that process as well. So kind of going through those processes where the health department was used to certifying restaurants, and we're not exactly a restaurant. We were a brewery with a tap room. We don't make our own food. We don't have a restaurant component to this. We're lucky enough to be in a town center here, though, that has other restaurants in this area. So they actually provide carry out for our customers. And we even have arrangements with some of them where our customers can call in an order. They can get pizza or wings or salad or anything they want. And these restaurants will deliver over just across the center here to us. So it's kind of a unique relationship we have there with the other restaurants.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I understand your wife's an architect and she helped design the tap room. You want to talk a little bit about how that went?
Yeah, this has been such a great partnership. I mean, we're life partners, but now business partners. This project really lended itself to actually, we kind of look at it like we're two part-time businesses. We have the brewery on one side, which I'm the brewmaster, and I brew all the beers and run that. And then my wife runs the tap room, and she designed a fantastic space. This community is over 50 years old and has a very distinctive architectural style. And it's actually an area where architects actually study this community because it has historical significance. My wife really designed the interior to kind of reflect that, as well as providing a modern spin to it. So there's a lot of concrete also in this neighborhood. There's we have fountains and playgrounds that are all built out of concrete and kind of really built into the community here. And so we went down to the concrete floor and polished it up. There's a great picture of the
trying to get the outside here with her lake.
The deck outside, yeah. I'm actually looking right out that window right now. That's my view.
Nice.
Yeah.
I was just flipping through your webpage here, but yeah.
No, go on.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt.
No, not at all. The way we kind of structured this was as two part-time businesses. We're open Thursday through Sunday. Our tap room is open. Then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm usually here brewing or getting the beers ready. So, we kind of tag team our business and our family. We have three boys at home. So we're kind of juggling everything right now. But it works out really well.
Nice. Did you bring in outside investors? Did you have to do a business plan, go to the bank? How did you do all this?
Yeah, we did not bring in other investors to this. That's one thing with the size of our brewery, the more investors you bring in, the more you're paying them back. You know,
certainly less control. Yeah,
less control, and you know, you have to distribute the profits all around. That's something we're actually looking into as a growth potential. But for this project, it wouldn't have worked to have outside investors. And that's something you need to consider if you're actually going to try to open up your own nano brewery, is make sure you can pay yourself first and it's profitable for you in your particular situation. You know, a lot of businesses, a lot of nano breweries that I see, once you bring in investors, now you have to have a much bigger goal in mind. You know, it may not be a viable business until you grow to, you know, 15, 20, 30 barrels. And so that's a much bigger project than what we had in mind. We like the small, community focused, very local tap room and brewery here.
Nice.
Yeah.
You mentioned you have a 2-barrel brewery. What kind of brewing equipment did you settle on for your nano brewery?
We went with stout tanks. We bought new tanks. The prices were very reasonable. It's a 3-barrel or a 3-kettle system, 2-barrel capacity, and it that works out very well. I ended up building my own control panel for it. My background is electrical engineering.
Me too.
And I've been one of these commuters, contracting with the government down in DC for years. And this is like the first time I actually get to use some of my engineering background, bringing out chemistry and thermodynamics and processes and all the electronics and that fun stuff.
Nice. How often do you brew to keep stocked?
We do an average of 2 beers a week. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in the summer we surge to 3. And actually I should mention over my shoulder there. Those are the fermenters. They're each 2-barrel fermenters and glycol cooled. But I have 6 of them back there. So it's kind of a cramped space, but what that allows me to do is, I can brew enough capacity in there, and then we transfer directly into 2-barrel bright tanks that are stored in a walk-in that's behind our bar. And so we'll condition the beers there and then serve directly from them. So we kind of avoid as much as possible kegging the beers.
I assume you pressurize them right in the bright tank or?
Yeah, we do. We will carbonate them in the bright tank and then we'll serve right from them. And so that allows us to, if I'm brewing 2 beers this week, I'll have another 2 ready to transfer into bright tanks and condition them up and get them ready to sell for that weekend. And so we're rotating stock like that a lot, and it works out. We kind of have a rhythm and it works out really well like that.
Nice. And how many bright tanks do you have how many beers can you put on tap that way?
Yeah. So I have a matching set. I have 6 brights in the walk-in. And so they're always full of something, and we will keg off some of the beer, usually when we're getting low, so we can open up one of the brights. Mm-hmm. And so our taps, we have room for about 8 to 9 beers depending on what else we're serving. You usually try to put something on nitro. We also have a nitro coffee line. It's fun. We partnered up with a local coffee roaster, and they provide us kegs of coffee. So we just put their coffee on and throw it on the nitro.
What are some of the first offerings you ended up putting on tap when you started? You said you started about a year and a half ago, I think.
Yeah, we started April of last year. I actually had 6 beers. So we filled each of the bright tanks with a different beer. Everything from, you know, your IPA to we had a Kolsch, a brown ale, and a stout, and a pale ale. And then one of my favorites is we call it the Rest in Red. It's kind of like a cross between an Irish red and an American pale ale. I dry hop it with Centennial and really kind of kick that up, give you a good hop flavor to it.
Yeah, I've actually been playing with Centennial myself a lot lately. It's becoming a very nice hop, actually, one that I enjoy.
Yeah. It's one of my favorites from a long time ago, and this recipe has been one of my personal favorites. So it was the first one I knew we were going to put on our rotating list going through. Yeah, we'll try to keep a set number of flagships on at all times. We kind of have a. Because of our the demographics here, and that we're really embedded in this community, we have a lot of just neighbors that come here, and they want to see the same beer. They want to see their favorite on tap, and that's what they're looking for. Instead of a typical brewery in a warehouse or industrial park, where they're going to attract a lot of the beer fans that are going to seek them out and want to try new things every time they go. We see that we definitely get a mix of the hardcore beer nerds and just regular everyday people who are looking to have a beer. So we end up doing, because of that, we do a lot of education, and all of our servers are Cicerone server certified. So we wanted to make sure that they could speak the language and could help our neighbors here kind of navigate this the beer choices that they have in front of them.
Nice. And yeah. I understand you have several flagship beers that you try to keep on tap most of the time, right?
Yeah, we have our Live Work Play IPA, which is kind of the motto of Reston. It was this town was conceived of as a planned community so that people could live here, work here, and play here. So that's our number one seller for sure around here.
Is that a kind of a mild IPA or really hoppy or what?
It's not quite as hoppy as some of the more traditional West Coast styles, but it is up there. It's around 60 IBUs, but I use some honey malt in there too, which I really like. It kind of just adds a little sweetness, a little bit of kind of this maltiness to it to try to balance out the hops a bit. So that's a good one. I should mention, it's kind of funny. There's a beer that we serve, which has become one of our flagship beers. We call it our Lord Fairfax. It's an English style pale ale. And since we're in Fairfax County, we named it Lord Fairfax. And it was really just a one-off beer I made one day. I had some extra Maris Otter malt and tried to figure out what to do with it. So we just kind of crafted this recipe, and that beer won a medal last year. And when we're at the award ceremony, it was funny because we got the medal and we kind of blasted it out on social media. And then I realized that I didn't have any of it on tap, which just happens, when you're small like us, you know, we can't keep every one of our flagship beers on tap all the time, but we try to kind of rotate through them. But that, from that day on, that became one of our flagships.
Nice. And you said it's an English style, right? So is it kind of like an English pub ale or?
Yeah, totally. It's much maltier.
That's what I enjoy is kind of the malty, messy, you know, English ales.
Yeah. And we'll occasionally put it on nitro too. And that makes a really smooth beer that way.
So do you rotate through the rest of your offerings, or how do you handle that? Do you like to brew a lot of different beers?
Yeah, we brew, kind of across the board, a lot of traditional styles, and then we'll try to interleave some more seasonal beers and then maybe an experimental one or two. But we focus on more traditional styles and just really producing good quality beers. Let's see. We always try to have the IPA on tap. There's definitely a segment of the craft beer drinkers that, you know, equate craft beer equals IPA. They're sometimes surprised that we don't have only one IPA on. We sometimes have a second or a double IPA or another American pale ale in there for the hop heads. But we all will also do that, like English style, as well as something dark. We have some good dark beer fans here, whether it's a stout or a brown or something along those lines. And then usually something lighter, like a Kolsch, or we just released a Pilsner.
I was going to ask, do you do a lot of lagers or mainly ales?
In the summertime, we can't do lagers at all because we're turning the beers around way too fast. Usually 2 to 3 weeks, and we're tapping. So in the wintertime, there is a little
extra production time that gets in the way, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's just double the time to make a lager. And that's taken up that fermenter. In the summertime we need that fermenter space to brew the next batch and the next batch. The very first lager that we brewed, this is a great story. We met with, this beer historian. The guy's name, local around here is, Mike Stein. He works at another, brewery, but he has a passion for, bringing back, pre-prohibition lagers. Mm-hmm. And his side business is called Lost Lagers. And so he came up and presented this idea to us that, that ended up working out really well because we're smaller and, we can do some experimental beers and we're not taking up like 30 barrel, 50 barrel fermenters. We can do a 2 barrel batch and give it a go. So we brewed the very first lager, it was a 100-year-old recipe. We sourced all these heirloom ingredients and period ingredients that that would have been available at that time. And the thing that scared me was that it was a 40% corn lager.
Oh wow!
So yeah, it was we had never brewed with actually any corn here before, but especially that much was very interesting. But that was the German ingenuity of trying to take that 6-row malt and reduce the protein in that beer. So they added the native corn that was present. So to give you an idea on the timing, that beer fermented and conditioned and we lagered it. It took about 6 to 7 weeks. And when we tapped it, it was so popular, it was finished in one weekend.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, I mean, the economics of that, of making a lagers don't quite work at this scale.
Yeah.
But in the wintertime, we can dedicate a tank because there is a bit of a slowdown in the wintertime. We don't quite get the foot traffic that we see in the outdoors when people are just out and about. And
because you're right on the lake, I would imagine a lot more people sit and have a beer right in the summer.
Yeah, that's right.
So how do you come up with new ideas for beers? And, you know, do you have a pilot system to do new batches or do you just do them on the 2-barrel?
Yeah, we're small enough where it doesn't make sense for us to do any pilots. Takes the same amount of time, and it's just about the same cost, really. There's not much not much more to just to do the 60 gallons. So we'll just run new beers right on that system. We're constantly looking for new things to do. Sometimes we're looking for old things to do, like the historical lagers that we were playing around with. I was just out at GABF just a week ago, and that's going to festivals or meeting up with your other local breweries or just visiting other places. That's kind of what I use for inspiration on new beers. See what other people are doing, and trying things out like that. So,
well, another question I have for you: how much of running a small brewery is about the beer versus the business? I know a lot of my friends have told me that it can quickly become all business, you know.
Yeah, no, it's still, I would say it's still a lot. It's still mostly the beer. It's all about the beer, but you do spend a lot of time with all the other business aspects. Now, with my wife and I co-owning and running this business, that works out really well because we can kind of divide the workload there. But we are very small, so we're wearing the hats of sales and marketing, taproom manager, inventory. I have to track all my inventory and all the legal paperwork that we need to do, and paying taxes and payroll and staffing. And so there's a lot of different aspects to running a business, but it is focused all around the beer. So I think running a small tap room like this, a small nano brewery, is a great way for people to start out in this business. Definitely, though, if you're a home brewer and you enjoy just making the beer, and you don't think you would enjoy having to maybe it's the accounting, or maybe it's writing an employee manual, or the all of these other things. If you can't fathom doing that, then it's probably not right for you. Mm-hmm. But I kind of feel that like homebrewers are problem solvers, and no matter what the domain happens to be, if a problem is presented with you, you learn about it and you figure out how you can solve that problem. And so I kind of tackle most parts of the business kind of like that. I've had to learn a lot about all the other all the other domains, all the other aspects of running a business, and what does it mean to own an LLC, mm-hmm. and what does it mean to, have employees, and buy an insurance for workers' comp or extra liquor liability. Like, trying to just navigate through all of this stuff has been a big learning curve. But life is all about learning, and I really enjoy the challenge of it.
Well, I know one challenge a lot of small breweries face is growth, and that's largely because you got a pretty good profit margin selling out of the tap room. But as you start to grow, that profit margin gets much, much smaller as you start to distribute your beer and take on outside funding and so on. Have you thought about plans for growth?
Yeah, growth for us is never going to be trying to get bigger in terms of capacity and to distribute. I think this is this is this may be you know, I kind of unique to what we're doing here. Growth for us would be to find another community and just replicate our business in there. If we can find another local community that would support that tap room and brewery to just be opened up right there. It's a really competitive market when you start to get into distribution, and it's a completely different game. Yeah. And I've seen this from, you know, working with all the other local breweries here. It's a great, great industry to be in. We're all friends. But that's, you know, once you start to try to grow and can or bottle or sell to restaurants, it's a very different game, and the margins are really, really tight.
Yeah. Cause a lot of people don't know that. I mean, obviously sell out of a tap room, you're getting, you know, I don't know exactly how much you charge for beer, but, you know, quite a few dollars per beer versus a can of beer sold through a distributor has got to be in the pennies or in the cents.
Yeah. We can realize all the profit that's sold in house. And when you're trying to sell, when you're trying to distribute, you have to, well, in at least in the state of Virginia, we have to go through a distributor. So they would take their cut, and then they sell to a retail store or a restaurant or things. And you know, the average average customer out there, or the average beer drinker, is you know, used to, you know, buying a bottle of beer for, you know, maybe a couple of, or a six pack for, you know, maybe $10. You know, we can't. At our capacity, there's no way we would make any money doing that. Yeah. And so there's kind of like a, there's kind of like a no man's land there. You have to really scale up and make money at a, in a distribution game. You need to be like in the 30 barrel range or maybe even more. And then you're talking like, really high capital expenditure. You would have to bring in, at least we would have to bring in investors to make that happen. We don't have cash like that lying around.
Yeah, most of my friends that have done it have gone and gotten outside investors and raised, you know, $1 million or more dollars, and then gone out bought it, you know, at least a 15 barrel brewery, if not a 30 barrel brewery, and so on.
Yeah.
So. But there are some advantages to staying small. You want to talk about maybe some of those?
Well, one of the biggest advantages, and I know you've mentioned this on, I think on your podcast a bunch of times, where like the home brewer can do things and can make beers that the typical professional brewery can't, that commercial brewery can't, just because of the size that you're dealing with. But I find that I can do a lot of those same things because we're brewing, you know, two barrels is, you know, 62 gallons. It's okay for me to spend a little bit extra money to get a certain type of ingredient, or to do, you know, to tweak my process to kind of employ some other new homebrew strategies. I can play around with things like that.
You can take risks that somebody with a 30 barrel brewery might not want to take, right?
Right, absolutely. You know, and doing this historical beer project that we did, it's something that, you know, hey, it's 60 gallons of beer. You know, I'm sure someone's going to drink it. You know, we'll figure something out there. But if you're at 30 barrels, that's a big expense, and you don't want to be, dumping that if something didn't quite come out right. So that's one of the advantages of what we can do here. Maybe another advantage of just staying small is that it stays a little bit more about the beer and less about the business. Because when you do get into that distribution game, you have to hire sales staff and marketers and have events going on all the time. And you're always taking your beer out to festivals or to restaurants for tastings and trying to sell that beer. Here we just open our doors and, the beer kind of sells itself. So I think that keeps it a lot more accessible, at least from a business owner's perspective, something that we can really execute on here by staying small. And we are also on the first name basis with our customers and our regulars. And we get instant feedback. They'll tell us what they like, what they would like to see us brew next. So that's really fun too.
Yeah, and I like that you're unlike some of my friends, are still close to the beer. I mean, you're still brewing a couple times a week and trying new things, which is great. I want to talk for just a minute. We were talking earlier about crowlers and growlers and all that other stuff. You do have some options, at least for folks that want to take some beer home with them, right?
Yep, absolutely. We do have growlers, and folks will bring in their own growlers here, and we'll fill them up. We just purchased a small crowler machine, a can seamer.
Crowler with a C is the can version of a growler, if you will, and they have. They sell equipment now and cans for very efficiently, very quickly sealing, small quantities of beer. Kind of like you take home a crowler, you take home maybe a 32-ounce can, right?
Yeah, that's right. And actually, the version that we just got will do 16-ounce cans, which I kind of like that mm-hmm. size. The buzzword I just heard was a brewer's growler is a four pack of 16-ounce cans. So we're hoping to fill up, pre-fill some cans and then have them in a refrigerator so that folks can just grab them and go. It makes it easier for our taproom staff not to have to fill growlers, cause that does take some time out of, pouring pints. And it's always, it's never as good as, drinking that fresh pint right off the tap. When you put it in the growler, it's as good as you can get it, but the cans seem to, especially pre-filling them and really focusing on, doing it right, you can get some cans that will last for several weeks, which is always it's always a concern of mine as a brewer. You sell a growler to someone and they leave it in their fridge for 2 weeks and it starts to decarbonate or gets a little oxidized because of the process of filling it. This way we can control that a little bit more and have a better experience in the cans.
Well, Jason, we're coming up near the end of our time, but I wanted to ask you, do you have any advice for folks that might be interested in starting up a nano brewery and selling out of the tap room, sort of the business model that you're using?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the opening up a nano brewery is a great way to get into this wonderful industry. You get to do beer, you get to make beer and make money doing it. So that's a fun thing. I think it's been a dream of mine forever. Even though I didn't think it would ever happen like this. But make sure if you are thinking about getting into this, you really have to make sure that the numbers are going to work out. Figure out how much beer you can make, in in the limited amount of time, and how much can you sell it for? And you have to really figure out if your particular business is going to be profitable at that size. It can be done, and I think we're proving that. But also be leery of the of growing too fast or growing into this distribution type business. Because that's a whole different ballgame, and many people that get into this kind of feel that allure to get bigger as fast as you can. And I would encourage you to really think about that and think about the benefits of staying small, and just find a great community out there and serve them with great beers and a great place to have the beers. So that's what I would say.
Well, Jason, I wanted to thank you for coming on the show. Really appreciate you being here and taking the time.
Oh, thanks so much. This was a blast, and you'll have to come out whenever you have some free time, and I'll buy you a pint.
That would be awesome. I always enjoyed a free pint. So he's only a few miles from here, so I am going to try and swing by there, Jason. But again, today, my guest was Jason Romano. Jason and his wife, Melissa, founded Lake Ann Brewery in Reston, Virginia. You can find out more about their brewery at lakeannbrewhouse.com. I think I got that right. Thank you again,
Jason. You got it. Thanks so much.
Well, a big thank you to Jason Romano for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue is packed with great information for homebrewers and craft beer fans. Take advantage of their fantastic sale and get 20% off when you use the offer code BEERSMITH2017 at beerandbrewing.com. And also Blickman Engineering, creators of the innovative new BrewVision wireless thermometer. Remotely monitor your brewing system from your iPhone or iPad, record data, set alerts, and grab recipes directly from the BeerSmith cloud. The BrewVision thermometer, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. And BeerSmith software, the industry standard for home and professional brewers that lets you design great beer recipes and brew with confidence. Download your free 21-day trial from BeerSmith.com today. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.